Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to our FA Cup Giant Killers run all the way through to Wembley. We go round five on this epic odyssey, and we've got an absolute stormer and a recent stormer as well by our standards. Welcome tonight, Dave Bowler. Welcome back.
Good evening. I think you're right. We've gone off brand. This is, you know, the 21st century. I don't know what we're talking about.
I think we've all said just before recording that we've seen to remember the 70s and for my part on the 80s as well, a whole lot easier than we did in 2017, but it's well worth getting into 2017. And welcome Bill Hearn in that respect. It's going to be a good one tonight.
Like you guys, 2017 is a lot less clear than 1973 or whatever. But I think the other thing that might confuse people is that Lincoln are now a fairly well-established League One side, but only 7 years ago they were non-league, along with the likes of Luton, teams like that. It's amazing how things turn around.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And Bill's dropped the line there. We're looking at Burnley versus Lincoln City tonight. FA Cup fifth round at Turf Moor, 2017. Premier League Burnley against National League Lincoln City. This is a Lincoln City who are, you know, within the second bit into the non-league pyramid. The first one, the first team to drop out of the Football League when it came to direct promotion and relegation to and from the Football League 1986-87. Bounced back at the first attempt that time. Not so on this occasion, but here they are building towards what would be promotion back to the Football League this season. And to go on to promotion again 2 years later by also winning the EFL trophy as well in 2017-18. But on this occasion, this is a trip to Burnley into the hills of Lancashire. Dave, we'll start with you. This is a Burnley side that, you know, we were talking about the strength of this lineup going into this game. By contemporary FA Cup standards, you know, a lot of Premier League teams, even Championship teams, maybe even some League One teams, pull the punches a little bit in the domestic cups and field, you know, a lot of shadow players, a lot of periphery players, throwing a couple of kids as well. This isn't what Burnley are doing, are they?
Well, this is Sean Dyche, of course. I mean, you can't get any more traditional meat and two veg than Sean Dyche, can you? I mean, he's not going to disrespect the FA Cup. And I guess when Burnley got this tie, you know, here we are, the fifth round, you're at home to Lincoln City, you're at home to the non-league team, you start to think, this is fantastic, we're going to be in the last eight. You know, we'll put our proper team out, we'll get into the last eight. A bit of luck, we'll get a home draw, then we've got a Wembley semi-final to look forward to. So from Burnley's perspective, you know, it makes sense to play a pretty strong team because, you know, this is one of those rare seasons where, you know, you feel if you're Burnley, well, it's opening up a little bit. We've got a real opportunity here to go and do something and get ourselves into a cup final, maybe. So, you know, you don't want to be taking any risks with it. You don't want to be offering hostages to fortune and slip up, and particularly not in front of your own supporters who are obviously going there looking forward to a proper day out and a nice, comfortable win and a passage through to the next round. So, no, I mean, it's you know, Tom Eaton's in goal. You've got Keenan Tarkowski at centre-arms. You've got Scott Arfield, who went on to a lot of success with Rangers. Sam Vokes, Welsh international. Andre Grape, spent a lot of money on him. Joey Barton's in there. So it's a proper, you know, out-and-out Burnley team. I mean, I think they made four or five changes before the game, but nothing, a couple for injuries, one for suspension. So they didn't, you know, it wasn't a question of, oh, we'll just rest a few people. This is the team, pretty much. I mean, Ben Mee may be on the bench, you might argue. Perhaps Ashley Barnes, you might argue, could play. But really, this is pretty much their team, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, Bill, this is a side that have Although they've unseated Sunderland in the third round there. I'm imagining you've not got much sympathy for this Burnley side this going into this one.
No, that was one of the bleakest seasons ever. That was the David Moyes season. We had the 19-point season, the 15-point season, and the David Moyes season. So it was an awful, awful season. But just to reiterate what Dave was saying about the strength of the Burnley side, they'd only lost three out of their previous 29 home games. So they were, decent at home. They were 15th in the league at the end of the season. So they weren't really battling against relegation. They certainly weren't going to win the league or get into the top four. So the FA Cup was their last throw of the dice. And of course, if you get to the quarterfinals, you're only one game away from Wembley. And, it's definitely something to aim for, isn't it? A Wembley appearance, and then who knows? So, yeah, it's a strong side, and this is why it's giant killing. I mean, basically, Leighton had no chance. Burnley were bound to win.
I mean, Dave, this Burnley side, Danny Cowley and his brother are getting to grips with this club. We'll come to the Cowleys, I think, partway through this podcast, because they fascinate me. But this is an incredibly organised Lincoln side. They don't offer much going forward. I think there's one that's bloomed over the crossbar in the first half. But apart from that, the goal is actually the only shot on target that they have within this. Yet they set themselves out to be magnificently stubborn as part of this. But prior to that, the run to get to this stage. It stops. We've got two championship sides in there. There's Ipswich Town, there's Brighton and Hove Albion. This is Brighton and Hove Albion on the way towards the Premier League. And Ipswich Town at that point in time were going the opposite trajectory. They've seen Oldham Athletic in the second round, Altrincham in the fourth round. It took Gisley, it needed a replay for them to overcome Gisley in the last qualifying round. A game, I believe, in which they had only 200 spectators there, compared to the thousands that encamped at Arsenal for the quarterfinals, and then we're being led towards their trip to Arsenal for the quarterfinals. But this Lincoln side, it's very much a wing and a prayer, but at the same time, the Cowleys are making something stir at Lincoln City, and this is a side that are on the way to promotion back to the Football League this season as well.
Overall, they have a terrific season, don't they? They get to the semi-final of the FA Trophy. They win the National League. I think one of the interesting things about Lincoln, you look at those early rounds, and the guy that stands out is Theo Robinson. He scores two when they beat Oldham, 3-2. He scores a couple again in the 2-2 draw at Ipswich. He scores again when they beat Brighton. And just after the Brighton game, which is the end of January, he gets a transfer to Southend United. So, if anything, I mean, the two sides that are playing here, it's Lincoln and the ones that are weakened because they've lost their centre forward, their sort of talisman, the main goal scorer. But, we talk about this in all kinds of podcasts, and momentum and belief and confidence and all that kind of stuff. And, they're going like a train in the league. I mean, they're winning week after week after week. They're having a fantastic run in the FA Trophy. As I say, they get through to the semi-finals of that. When you believe like that, it doesn't really matter that much, I suppose, who you're playing in a sense. And of course, they go to Turf Moor thinking, well, we've got nothing to lose here. If we lose, well, it's only what everybody expects. And if we win, we're all heroes. The big thing with them is, as you said earlier, they are really well organised at the back. You've got to give Cowley huge credit for that. I mean, they got to Burnley not to concede. That's the first thing, because a replay wouldn't do them any harm, even if they lost the replay. I mean, it'd be a few more quid in the bank, wouldn't it, for when they get promoted? They go there not to concede, and they do it really, really well. I mean, it's not one of those games where Burnley should have scored five or six. The goalkeeper doesn't have a huge amount to do because they're really organised in front of him. They've got the back four. They don't get pulled around. They know what they're doing. They stick to their job. They deal with set pieces really well. And they're just a nicely organised side, and this is the start of that Lincoln renaissance, isn't it? As you said, they win promotion this year. A couple of years later, they win promotion again from League Two to League One, and they've been in League One nicely established for a while now. And this is where it all comes from, this season in the National League. I mean, the previous season, they got nowhere near getting promoted. They were a nothing team. And then all of a sudden, Cowley has galvanised them and organised them. And they're a completely different prospect.
I mean, Bill, I'm just looking down at the list of seasons here for Lincoln City. They're in League Two in 2006-07. They reached the playoffs, but lose out to Bristol Rovers 7-4 on aggregate in the semi-final. And then they hit this slippery slide, basically. For the best part of a decade, you know, they slink towards relegation over the next 4 years, 15th, 30th, 20th, and eventually 23rd in 2010-11 season out of the Football League for the second time in their history. The initial seasons in what was the conference at the time before it turned National League, 17th, 16th, 14th, 15th and 13th between 2011-12 and 2015-16. And then suddenly, here they are, 2016-17, they're on the way to the title. I think they're accumulating 99 points in the season, which is a prototype of the Wrexham and Notts County battle of last season. I think Tranmere ended up finishing runners up with 95 points last season, lost out in the playoff. And then here they are, just about to go, stratospheric, really, they'll be back in the third tier of English football, by 2019. But this run to the FA Cup, quarterfinals via this fifth round game, it's an incredible turnaround that the Cowleys have managed to implement to get them to this point, to take them to a Premier League club who field that arguably their strongest side, to come from this adversity of a decade's worth of adversity. It's a ridiculous turnaround in such a short space of time.
I mean, certainly they were consistent, weren't they, when they got relegated to the conference? As you see, I think six seasons they finished between 13th and 17th. One season, if they hadn't had such a good end to the season, they would have been relegated to the Northern Division. So, there was something magical happened, because if you look at the individual players, you've got the definition of journeyman. I mean, I don't mean that disrespectfully. I would give me right arm to be half as good as any of the Lincoln players. But my goodness, they didn't really go on to do anything. Theo Robinson's a classic. I mean, Theo Robinson played for 13 different clubs. That's a big proportion of the entire Football League. So what turned them from, into title winners, FA Cup giant killers? And a few years later, they actually knocked Sunderland out of the semi-final of the playoffs in the League One playoffs. Of course, Cowley was long gone by then, but I think the conclusion's got to be that the Cowleys were the difference, and they recognised decent players who would do a job for them. They would organise the defence, as Dave said. And I think they've got to take the credit for turning a mediocre Conference League side into, as you say, potentially a Championship side, getting quite close to the Championship. Yeah, the Cowleys are interesting. And for a wee while, they were the managers that everybody wanted. When there was a vacancy, they were always mentioned. And eventually they relented and went to Huddersfield. But we're probably jumping on a little bit too much there. And what we want to do is talk about Lincoln. But the Cowleys are very interesting characters. Both of them PE teachers. This was their first full-time football job. So they took a big, big chance to give up a steady job to go to Lincoln. So they put the money where their mouth is, and it paired off.
I mean, Dave, looking at some of the players here, the man who gets the winning goal, Sean Raggett, he does join them at Portsmouth later on. Alex Woodyard will go on to play for Wimbledon. Alan Powers probably got the best of the bunch, really. In terms of where he goes from here, he goes and plays in the SPL with Kilmarnock and St. Mirren. James McComb, gone around the clubs at Scunthorpe, Bristol City, Huddersfield Town, Preston North End. I think there was two spells at Lincoln as part of that. Joe Ward, who was on the bench, came on for the last 9 minutes. He'd go on to play for Derby County. There is no kind of... You look at the side, and as Bill said, a lot of journeymen, a lot of people who've really, had to, the cabaret artists of the football pyramid, You know, these are doing kind of like the social clubs on a Friday night and doing the raffle at the end of it, aren't they?
There's no uncut diamonds there, are there, really? You know? Yeah, there were no, obviously football's changed from the 70s and the 80s, but there were no top flight clubs beating a path to Lincoln City's door to sign up a centre forward or a left winger or something from this team, the way that they did it with Hereford back in the 70s or whatever. I mean, it's just, as you say, as Bill said, a team of journeymen. There's nothing there that stands out. There's nothing there that jumps out at you and says, oh, he went on and, oh, that's that fella who then went and did this or went and did that. There's none of that. I mean, they are playing at the level at which they're playing. As Bill says, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, it's, you know, they're all, you know, perfectly good footballers, but not of a level that you would think are going to threaten Burnley at any stage. But on the day, they deserve the win.
I mean, obviously, Sean Raggett went on to have a brilliant career, well, still having a brilliant career at Portsmouth. And I think Jack Muldoon's still going strong at Harrogate. But definitely nobody, none of them set the world alight.
And from the Burnley perspective, though, you know, this is a team that, you know, we've already mentioned them, but, you know, Sam Vokes is in there. He's been, helped take Wales to the semi-finals in the 2016 European Championship. Joey Barton's amongst this. Johan Berg, Gudmundsson, who've been part of the Iceland side that have got to the quarterfinals of the European Championship. That same tournament as Wales made the semi-finals. Tom Heaton, you know, who was a current England international at that point in time. Michael Keane was on the brink of his first England cap. James Tarkowski would go on to play for England. John Flanagan would be part of the Liverpool side. He pushed City all the way for the Premier League title race of 2013-14. Scott Arfield, you know, Canadian international, a lot of experience. Andre Gray, another, you know, plenty of experience here. This isn't a Burnley side that they've not expected the upset, but, you know, watching the highlights today, you know, they do, you know, make every attempt to try and win this game, yet they just fall flat in the final third constantly. As you mentioned earlier on, only 3 defeats in 29 at home. We know how stubborn a Sean Dyche side can be. This is, like, you know, it's the first time in 103 years that a non-league side has gone on to reach quarterfinals of the FA Cup. You know, by contemporary standards, you know, even kind of like, you know, the standards of the FA Cup's glory days, there's probably no bigger fifth-round seismic shock than this one.
Yeah, there certainly isn't. I mean, the previous non-league side to get this far was Queen's Park Rangers just before the First World War. And, of course, there were only 2 divisions then. So QPR in the Southern League, it was effectively the second, third division. So they were the first real non-league side to progress, certainly to beat 4 league sides. No non-league side's ever beaten 4 league sides in the same FA Cup season. And good sides at that. Burnley weren't the only ones. You know, Brighton were very, very good, as you've said. Oldham would be expected to have beaten Lincoln. And likewise, Ipswich. So they just were very, very good.
I mean, as far as Sean Dyche is concerned, this has to be, like you say, that missed opportunity. You know, you're one step away. He's clearly taken this very, very seriously with that lineup that he's put out there. You know, if you're Sean Dyche on this day, what little hair that you already, that you existingly have left, it's going to be tough to pull the rest of it out.
Absolutely. I mean, he'd have started on the beard by half time, I should have thought. With all respect to people like Sean Dyche and to clubs like Burnley, in the modern game, these opportunities don't come around very often. We're speaking the day after the League Cup final, which was Liverpool-Chelsea, you know, and increasingly in the 21st century, Cup finals are the preserve of Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United, half a dozen clubs, the usual suspects. The chances to get to Wembley and to win a cup, they're pretty few and far between for you know, the rest of us. You know, when the draw was made for this and Burnley came out with Lincoln, they must have been thinking, you know, it was Christmas. I mean, this is absolutely what you want. you know, this is, hello, everything's coming our way. This is our year, the name's on the cup, all that kind of crap. They must have been thinking this was the big opportunity. And Sean Dyche, of course, I mean, he went to the semi-finals, arguably should have gone to a final, with Chesterfield against Middlesbrough in the late 90s, wasn't it? When 97, something like that, whatever it was. So he knew from the other side of the coin just what possibilities there were to come and cause a shock. And so he would have pumped that into the players right from the outset. You do not take this lightly. This team can come and cause trouble. We have to approach this as though we're playing Manchester City. We have to be, you know, at our best. We have to do everything right. But I think it doesn't matter how often you say that to people, to footballers. They're human. They can, however much you think you've tuned in, however much you think you're prepared, however much you think you're treating it like it is Manchester City, when you come out of the tunnel and it's Lincoln, there's got to be something in you that says, no, nice day today, we'll have this one 2-0 or 3-0, and then we'll be off to the city. You can't keep that out of your mind. And that's, I think, in the end, what causes these sorts of games to happen. If you don't get that early goal, then all of a sudden you get to half time, it's 0-0. Okay, still 45 minutes ago. You get to the hour mark and it's 0-0. And you're starting to twitch, because then you're starting to remember all that grainy footage of Hereford and Blythe Spartans and Colchester and all that stuff that we always see, you know, in Football Focus before FA Cup weekends. Then you start to get the nerves. And it's that's the great thing about FA Cup football, I think. It's less about what abilities you have on the pitch and all that sort of stuff. It's a test of character. It's in the mind. That's what the FA Cup is. That's what makes it different, what makes it special. And if you're Burnley and it's an hour gone and you've missed it, not great chances, but a couple of reasonable chances, and Lincoln aren't looking like they're going away, then you're starting to think, oh God, it's not going to be us, is it? And then Lincoln is starting to think, oh, hang on, we might sneak one here. And that's when, you know, that last half an hour of a game like this, that's when it turns, that's when it starts to get really interesting, I think. And that's the greatness of the FA Cup.
It's a great time to score, though, wasn't it? Right at the end. And you haven't really got time to get that nervous or panicky. You know, you're thinking you've only got 5 minutes to keep them out. And Lincoln did score a lot of late goals that season, both in the Cup and the league. And again, is that down to the Cowleys? You know, was it the training? Was it the mental toughness? But certainly it was a great time to score. And the ball was way over the line. when I first saw it live, I wasn't too sure, but it was a long, long way over the line. So thank goodness it wasn't disallowed. Wasn't it Chesterfield who had a problem like that against Middlesbrough in the semis? So yeah, there wasn't much coming back for Burnley, really, was there? That was it.
I mean, there you go, LAN technology helping Lincoln out there. One of the rare occasions that the dreaded technology has actually helped football come up with it. It's facilitated a bit of romance there.
As regular listeners will know, I'm not a fan of VAR. I do think goal line technology is fine. I mean, you know, it's a yes or no, isn't it? Did the ball go over the line or not? I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, in this case, if the linesman had managed to miss that, I mean, I don't know what he would have been doing. I mean, Bill says it was plenty over the line. Nice goal as well, actually. I mean, well worked, corner to the post, good header back across goal. And
Raggett wasn't going to leave it, was he? Pushed his own pair out the way to get it in.
Yeah, it was not a nicely worked goal and deserved, I suppose, in the end. I mean, as I said, Lincoln didn't really concede many opportunities. Andre Gray, I think if he looks at the highlights, will think he probably should have scored one, maybe two goals. But they're not clear chances, are they? They're you know, half, three-quarter chances sort of thing.
Yeah, indeed. This momentum as well. You know, Bill mentioned it earlier on, a team that's used to winning. So even when it comes into a game like this, you know, they've got to feel kind of like confident, like, you know, there's a degree of invincibility about them, no matter how huge the mountain that they're presented with might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think winning's a habit, isn't it? And if you're winning every week, you feel invincible, doesn't matter who you're playing. I mean, Leicester are probably enjoying this season a lot more than they enjoyed last season, even though they're a league down, because winning is great. You know, you look forward to the next game, you think you can't be beaten. And Lincoln were proving it. You know, as you say, they walked away with the league. It was about 19 points ahead of the second place side. I'm not sure, but it was certainly, you know, they were just on a roll. And they took that through to the following season and the following season.
But looking at the list of teams that Burnley might have been able to go up against in this FA Cup fifth round, there's Manchester City. There is, bizarre to say it, but defending Premier League champions Leicester City, Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur, Manchester United, Arsenal all in there. You know, as far as top flight's concerned, Middlesbrough in there, who were Premier League team at the time as well. Plenty of scope to be drawn against, you know, some, you know, a substantial stumbling block as far as, you know, the longevity in the tournament is concerned. You know, as you said earlier, being handed this draw, Arsenal played, you know, another fifth round, aside in such a United at this stage, it's on home soil. Brush them aside, but you know, Arsenal travel away to some. But Burnley have just kind of like been given the keys to the quarterfinal.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we spoke to Mark about Bradford City, didn't we? And they're in the League Cup a few weeks ago. And I suppose from Lincoln's perspective, there's probably a little bit of disappointment when they do draw Burnley, because you know, you've got to feel, okay, it's a Premier League team. We're probably at the end of the road now. And why couldn't we have got Arsenal and 50,000 people and all that money and a day out at, you know, the Emirates and all that sort of stuff? So there's kind of a sense of disappointment maybe for that. But for Burnley, I mean, this is probably Bill's the same with Sunderland. Every now and again, you get this kind of thing where you're in the fifth round and you get a nice draw and you think, hello, this is great. This is fantastic. And football being football, you inevitably cock it up. But you know, this is, if you're Burnley, the what is it, 18,000 people, 19,000 people that go to that game, 16,000 of them probably Burnley supporters, they're all going there in anticipation, five goals, and getting through to the sixth round of the FA Cup, and this is our year. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna get back to Wembley, and we're gonna have something special. And 50 odd years, 55 years, I think, isn't it, since they got to a cup final. It's a peculiar mix of anticipation and dread at the same time, you know, because you really feel this is our great chance, this is our year, we're doing all right here, we're going to come through this. And then in the back of your mind, being a football supporter of a club, you know, like Burnley, like Sunderland, like West Brom, there's that nagging thing at the back of your mind saying, ah, something's going to go wrong here. And it generally it does, unfortunately. But that team should not be losing that game. And and if they do lose that game, it should be one of those odd luck stories where the Lincoln goalkeeper, Paul Farman, has made six fantastic saves. They've hit the post three times. They've had a stonewall penalty. It should be one of those big odd luck stories. And it isn't. Lincoln give as good as they get. It's not a particularly enthralling game of football. It's not, you know, Hereford Newcastle or anything like that, or Colchester Leeds or something. It's a workmanlike performance from a non-league team that's too much for a Premier League team to overcome on the day. It's a very strange, you know, it's a very strange, because there's a lot of old-fashioned elements to it. I mean, you know, the Lincoln City number 9, Matt Reed, who we haven't spoken about yet. I mean, he is what we have to call these days a unit. I mean, he's a giant thing up front, you know, not particularly mobile. I hope he's not listening. But he does his job, you know. He comes up against Joey Barton for a lot of the game for some reason, set pieces and stuff like that, and he's knocking Joey Barton all over the place, which immediately endears him to a nation. And he wins the ball, he holds it up, he does all those things that supposedly went out of football 25 years ago. And when a centre forward is awkward and big and physical and powerful like that, I don't care how good you are, it's still very difficult to deal with that. Because they're just awkward. You don't know what to do with them. You can't get rid of them. You can't get the ball off them. You're fouling them every 5 minutes because you're trying to go through them. And you know, you can see Burnley, they don't know what to do with this bloke. And it's a thing of beauty, frankly. It's a throwback to another age.
Would still, if Burnley had played at their best, they would have won.
Absolutely.
But Burnley played very, very poorly. And, you know, it had to be, because if the Premier League side had played to their maximum, they would have beaten Lincoln City. So, you know, they just all came right on the day. And you know, perhaps Burnley were too cautious. Perhaps Burnley were too much thinking, we haven't got to underrate these people. We've got to show them respect. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. Perhaps if they'd gone out and thought, we're Premier, we should win this, let's go for it. But something went badly, badly wrong. And the Burnley fans are still upset about it to this day, obviously.
I mean, Burnley and Ness have kind of been, I mean, I've seen a bit of Burnley treatments in some respects. You know, one of the masters of pragmatic football at this point in time, Burnley, you know, Deitch and all of that, you know, the hard and compromising to play, physical, you know, knock the ball around when you need to, but, you know, they have that, you know, anti-football in a way, but, you know, there's a wonderfulness to that kind of pragmatism. Jack Charlton's Island and the way that, you know, there's a grand simplicity in it. Stop the opponents from playing in the areas of the pitch that they do their best football in, you know, and keeping it simple. And in many respects, you know, despite, we'll come to Cowley's very soon, but this is Lincoln kind of like doing a Burnham job on Burnham.
Yeah, I mean, they played similar sort of football, but nevertheless, the Premier League side should always beat a Conference League side, and things just went right on the day. Lincoln defended as if their lives depended upon it, but they defended, they weren't deep. Burnley weren't getting many chances. Lincoln got it just right, caught Burnley on the right day. And, you know, you would say they deserved the win, really. They certainly weren't under the cosh. And as I say, you know, they kept going for 90, 95 minutes in every round and in every league game too. They overcame the disappointment of losing the lead at Ipswich. And they must have thought they'd blown it. You know, they thought, well, we'll lose the replay. You know, we only get one chance, really, and we've blown it. But no, they won the replay and did the business.
I mean, Dave comes to the Cowleys. Honestly, they're absolutely fascinating. You know, the job that we did with Lincoln was incredible. You know, we've spoken of this, you know, 10-year, you know, decade of life, basically, at the club. And then suddenly here they are, you know, FA Cup fourth finalists, you know, on the way to the National League title. Following the year, they take them into the Football League, win the EFL trophy, motion to League One, the third tier, the following season. But then Huddersfield come knocking within, you know, the first few weeks of the 2018-19 season, by then I think it is, to take them to West Yorkshire. Difficult for any manager or managerial duo to knock that back. This is a Huddersfield side that's recently been in the Premier League. You know, it's a huge opportunity for them, but it doesn't quite work out. Nor does the time at Portsmouth, really. It's peculiar in some respects in how a manager or, you know, a certain coaching staff will just suit a certain club down to the ground, yet struggle to be able to do it anywhere else. I'll point to Nathan Jones in that respect, who seems to be able to manage Luton Town and Luton Town only, and struggle absolutely everywhere else. The Cowleys, you know, they are a peculiarity, but I can't help but wish them well in what they're going to try and do now at Manchester United. And within that, you know, they also have the balls to turn down Bradford City, which would have been an intriguing job to take on.
It's a very interesting, you know, working as a, you know, as two brothers together for this length of time across such an industry as football, that's, you know, constantly the tension and the anxiety and the pressure and all of that. And then, you know, being family on top of that, I mean, it's a hell of a thing to ask, isn't it? You know, because I mean, people are always falling out in football. It's the nature of the game, but you've always got that thing, you know, you can't fall out with your brother, but I mean, it's not, it carries lots of additional things with it, doesn't it? You know, it's not Clough and Taylor. I mean, Clough and Taylor were mates. Okay, and then they stop being mates. Big deal. It's another thing if you fall out with your brother and you know, you can't see him at Christmas again or whatever. Yeah, you know, that's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it? I mean, you are right that there are some some people just suit a particular environment. And, you know, the great thing about football club, and I'm always low, whenever somebody gets the sack at a football club, manager gets it, and all of us on the outside, what the hell have they sacked him for? We don't really know. If we're not the supporter of that club, we don't really know what the things are that they don't like about him, or why the supporters have turned against him, all that kind of stuff, because we don't see it week after week. And equally, we don't know what's going on behind him in the boardroom, and what the pressures are, and you know, who's pushing for this and who's stopping them doing that, and whatever. You know, and you can go from a Lincoln City where, I mean, particularly after this season, I mean, they must have just handed them the keys. Right, you get on with it, do what you like. You know, here's the money that we've got, you carry on. And yeah, maybe you then get to Huddersfield and it's a different kettle of fish. Yes, well, you can do that, but we don't want you doing that. Or we want you to play this way, or we want you to, you know, he's got to play, or that kind of, it then becomes a different thing. And every football club has got a very different environment. And
I mean, what Lincoln wanted apparently was a manager who took a team to the playoffs the previous season, and Cowley had taken Braintree, which was some achievement, to the playoffs in the National League. And they did look, you know, I think Harrogate were one. He didn't take the Harrogate manager, but we thought, well, Cowley, he's been there, done it. He's the one we want. It was a brave move. And they had to persuade him to give up his work, of course, and take his brother along. But they did sort of know what they were looking for, and they got it right, whereas how often do directors and owners get it right in terms of appointments? So I think he was very much headhunted.
Yeah, they got, I mean, they absolutely knew what they were looking for, and they made a good choice. I just wouldn't, you know, I hate using this phrase that a club might be too big for him, or, you know, he's reached his level. But I mean, players reach a level. Maybe managers do as well. You know, maybe a manager can't go beyond League One or League Two and be a success elsewhere. And I think there are different pressures. I think at Lincoln, particularly having had 10 years of, more than 10 years of mediocrity and things just going badly, if you get that going, all of a sudden you're the messiah, aren't you? You know, you're the chosen one. You go to Huddersfield, where everything has started to fall apart a bit, having been in the Premier League, but it's only been 2 or 3 years ago that you had, you know, great success and went up, stayed in the Premier League for a season. It's a different mindset amongst the support and amongst the board and all of that, and they want a different thing. And could you play slightly more attractive football? It's all very well, this pragmatic thing, but, you know, we've got to try and entertain people. And then it becomes a different thing. And what Lincoln did was say, right, this is what we want. We want to get in the playoffs. We want to get out of this division. Do it. You can suddenly get to another football club and it'll be, well, we want to win and we want to get in the playoffs, but you've got to do this as well. And then that becomes a whole different ball game.
If West Brom managerial posts become vacant, or a Sunderland job had become vacant while the Cowleys were doing well at Lincoln, we would have wanted them, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
Everybody wanted them in the at least Championship level. And yet it's slowly gone downhill.
Casting forward, you know, they do go out to the finals to Arsenal. But Arsene Wenger takes them massively, massively seriously, which, you know, you can't not have to be just not, you know, Premier League side out. The Arsenal side that placed them in the quarterfinals was Chet, Bellerin, Staffy, Koscielny, Gibbs, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Xhaka, Ramsey, Walcott, Giroud, and Sanchez, with Ozil, Coquelin and Perez being on the bench. Arsenal put out 5 more winners eventually, but even within that, this is a game that is, you know, surrounded by rancor as Arsenal fans are protesting about Wenger. You know, there's, you know, 4 places, not a trophy, banners, the terrible paper banner of Wexford that we just needed to, we deserved to leave that day, something for those banners. They hold off until injury time at the end of the first half. It's a minute into injury time when Walcott breaks the resistance. And Giroud scores in the second half with an own goal from Luke Waterford. Sanchez scores and Ramsey as well. They, you know, to go to Arsenal on a day when it's a little bit fractious, shall we say. They equip themselves well enough for certain 45 minutes of stubbornness away to Arsenal to add to what we've done at Burnley.
Well, I've been to Arsenal with the Albion where we've been 3-0 down after about 10 minutes. So, I mean, you know, to get to half times of that. I mean, yeah, there comes a point where, you know, the fairy tale has to end, doesn't it? You know, and when you go to Arsenal, at a point where Arsene Wenger was desperately trying to win the FA Cup every year to get a trophy to deal with all of the criticism he was getting from everybody else. I mean, I think it was, that's a bridge too far. It was a fantastic achievement to get there, and to get to virtually to half time at 0-0 again shows how well organised they were as a team. You know, and again, it speaks highly of what the Cowleys did as management and as coaches, getting that organised and set up and the belief in the players. You know, it's a great credit to them, and I think that whole season is a great credit to them. I mean, you know, I was watching bits of it earlier on. And there's a little interview with Raggett, the goal scorer, after the game at Burnley, you know, and he goes on about what a great day it is in fantasy. But there's no time to celebrate because it's North Ferriby on Tuesday, and that, you know, that's, I mean, it's funny, but it also speaks of a team that is really together. It's a bonded team, and they want to, yeah, they're going to go and get their promotion, they're going to go and win promotion, they're going to go up, they're going to do what they've set out to do that season. And it is a great story. But I think one of the weird things about this, and you're both right, you and Bill are right, we remember the 1970s better than this. But not only that, the 1970s is better covered than this. Because looking for it today, you can only find, you know, what, 5 minutes or something of match footage, a clip you haven't got, you know, the match of the day thing on there, because of all the rights and the broadcasters and the this, that and the other. Anybody puts the whole thing on YouTube and it's immediately taken down by somebody's lawyers and all that sort of stuff. And there's not that many online reports either. I think, you know, there's the BBC and the Guardian, you could find a bit. And I think, this isn't necessarily a discussion for today, but in a bigger picture, we are in real danger of being the most reported on and the most covered period in history ever, the last sort of 15, 20 years. And in 25 years' time, we're going to come and look for this, and it ain't going to be there. It will all have disappeared into the ether. Whereas you'll still be able to find Ronnie Radford knocking the 7 bells out of that ball into the top corner at Elephant. You won't be able to find any of this stuff. It's a really weird thing that's happening. That's another discussion.
I think it's the first period where crowds have gone down for the cup game prior to, I don't know when it changed, the 1990s. The cup game was exciting and you would get more for a cup match than a league match. I think when we played Burnley in the third round, the crowd in our previous game, which was Liverpool, was 30,000 higher. So 30,000 people decided, well, we'll give the cup game a miss. It's not that important. So it is a different era that we're moving into. I think one thing about the Arsenal game, that Lincoln only had 23% possession and yet they held out until half-time. And it must have been nerve-wracking to know that you're going to give these 11 maestros the ball for almost all of the match and you've got to work like crazy to keep them out. I think, you know, on the pitch, they probably did really well, but when they got out and thought about what they'd achieved, it's quite amazing, really, to let Arsenal have the ball for 77% of the game and try to get away with it, and they nearly did.
I think that's a really good point you make, though, Bill, about the attendances. And I think that's played into the FA Cup being less important. And I think that's because of the way that we consume our football is different. Because in the 70s, yes, you could have a season ticket, but most people didn't. By and large, you just went on the day, didn't you? You paid your 50p or whatever it was, and you went in the ground. And once we got to all-seater stadiums in particular, we all started buying season tickets. And the season ticket didn't include your cup games. So if you wanted to go to the cup game, you'd paid your 500 quid or whatever it was at the start of the season. And then it felt like football was free kind of after that. You know, you just wave your ticket and you go in. And then you get to January and they want you to pay £25 to go to a football match. Hang on. And I think that made a big difference. That's changed the way people have felt about all that sort of stuff. Because then you go put your hand in your pocket and find a few quid. And if it's not a particularly attractive game, if it's early in the competition, it's, you know, you don't want to do it necessarily. And that's, I think, changed a lot of how the FA Cup's gone. And I think that's been an underreported thing about, you know, we talk about the squad rotation and not taking it seriously and all of that, but I think that's played a big part in how the FA Cup's changed.
Wonderful talk about the brilliant, certainly their best moments. I don't know, post Graham Taylor. You know, I do know of people who saw Graham Taylor's wonderful Lincoln City side in the mid 1970s, a crew fan. That I know who states them to be the best thing you've seen at that level. You know, and after a decade of abject misery. This was, I don't know, it's the stuff of dreams to let any supporter of any club in any state that they're in, you know, hang on to that hope and believe that, you know, there are clear skies ahead at some point, and that you'll have your day or your season or your half a decade or whatever it is. Wonderful to hit this game.
It's been a pleasure. It's nice to get into the colour era instead of black and white. Although, it is nice to think that there are still these games. And, you know, even this season, Maidstone served it up, didn't they, at Ipswich a few weeks ago. You know, so it's nice to think that this stuff still is.
It still can happen.
Yeah.
It still can indeed. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Ben. I'm looking forward to the quarterfinals as well, as the field narrows. But the jocks continue to be. Please do join us again next time for our FA Cup Champions podcast all the way through to the final. Thank you.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a Thees Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.